Welcome to Open Source Startup Podcast. This is Tim from Essence VC and Robbie from Cowboy Ventures. We're super excited to have Ryan, the CEO of Tabular, which is building the headless data warehouse. So welcome, Ryan.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Awesome. And it's great to have you. So I think our story would probably be best starting with Apache Iceberg. And for those who aren't aware, maybe you can talk a bit about the background on why that exists and why you decided to create it and what kind of the like pain or a gap there was that kind of led to its creation.
Oh yeah, no problem. So Iceberg as a project grows out of the sort of Hadoop space, which was based on, you know, papers that Google produced for MapReduce and all that 20 years ago now. So Hadoop was sort of this open source rebuild of that. And the fundamental issue with that era was that we were building databases, but I think we didn't really know we were building databases. And so we took a very distributed systems, like just get it working kind of approach to it. And that bit us pretty hard. That made a lot of things very difficult and made it so you couldn't rely on your data infrastructure in ways that you needed to. So Iceberg was really built to solve, you know, well-known challenges in this space, but things that were so low level in the infrastructure that not a lot of people had moved to tackle those problems yet. So the first thing is we found that, you know, performance was just pretty bad. And this was felt more acutely by those of us working at Netflix because we were running on S3 instead of some like on-prem, you know, close to the service infrastructure. So latencies were 10 times longer and performance just, you know, turned out bad. We also found that all of the correctness problems were exacerbated by the same problem, by latencies being higher. So the old tables had correctness problems. If you did certain things like kind of around the same time, queries might lie to you, which is not a great place to be. And being in the cloud definitely made that worse. And then there was all the SQL behavior stuff that, you know, we think databases should act generally like databases. So you can rely on those guarantees and like not think, hey, if I do this, is it gonna like screw up data and cause me a month's worth of cleanup work?
Yeah, and I think definitely there's a lot of thoughts process and also the community behind, right, when you're building such a lower level sort of like file formats. So maybe talk maybe a little about the sort of, maybe not all the detailed history, but maybe a little bit of history of Iceberg, right? Talk a little bit initial goals, but you know, it definitely evolved, right? And we also see the ecosystem has evolved.
So when we started, we really thought of it as a way to fix these correctness problems, right? Tables lying to you if you did certain things, like that's really, really bad. It basically means you can't trust your data. And if you can't trust your data, what's the point? So we wanted to fix that as our primary goal. And we also said, hey, as long as we're fixing that, let's fix all these other things that waste our time or, you know, cause performance bottlenecks and things like that. Because this is such a low-level thing in our stack that we should, you know, not just fix the one problem, we should fix everything by really making this better. What we ended up doing by fixing that correctness problem was fairly surprising. So we think of the project very differently today than we did back then, because we thought, oh, hey, we need atomic transactions, the ability to make changes that are only seen if the entire thing completes successfully. But what we actually ended up doing was solving a coordination problem where you have Hive and Flink and Spark and Trino and all these different databases that don't know about one another, all interacting with the same data set at the same time. And that coordination problem turns out to be much more powerful because that's what everyone wanted, right? They had all of these different database engines that are good at different things, right? Trino and Flink, for example, are largely complementary. They don't do the same things at all. But it was unsafe to use these things in the same architecture. And Iceberg solved the problem of making that possible.
So in 2017, I believe, that's when Iceberg was released. And then Tabular came in 2021, if I have my dates correct. Can you kind of walk us through what happened between 2017 and 2021 that kind of led to the creation of Tabular?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So we open sourced the project from Netflix because we knew that this was a problem that everyone had. I mean, we'd been talking about this problem for years before 2017 when we actually decided, hey, this is, you know, a priority for us to solve. And so it was this community of developers and people running data platforms, you know, essentially data platform people like us for a long time. And we built onto the project, integrated it with different engines and, you know, kept doing that. And we realized sometime around, you know, early 2021 that what was holding us back was not like the developer or large company adoption of this format. We open sourced it because we wanted to make this universal format that worked with everything and that other people would adopt. But that adoption was limited because it was hard to use. It was built for data platform people and not for everyday users. So we realized that in order to, you know, continue the work and continue the project, we needed someone providing assistance and help and a platform in this space that wasn't just limited to, you know, Apple running their platform team and Airbnb running their platform and Netflix running their platform. So we decided to create Tabular to run that platform for everyone, you know, whoever wants to use it.
Yeah, and definitely the community grew, right? You know, a lot of people definitely have heard of Iceberg. I think especially at the engineers that work on sort of data systems, right? I think if you work on any part of the stack like Spark or, you know, Hive or Hadoop, right? Iceberg, this name has came up a lot. But it will be interesting because I don't think we've seen a company started based on the file formats, based on this level before. So obviously from 2021, when you started a company, there is a community that's growing, but a lot of people are using it for maybe internal platforms or using it sort of for their own usage. What was sort of the thought process here? Like, what was the motivation to start a commercial company around this? Maybe talk about like the learning process when you started, right? Some of the initial ideas and also leading to some learnings of starting a company at this stack, which I think is just fairly new.
There's a lot in that question, so I'll cover it as best I can. Like I said, we wanted to start addressing the expansion or start addressing the problem of like, how do people actually use this thing? But the company is not selling the file format, or we think of it as a table format. You know, it's a bunch of file formats and ways of tracking metadata. That's not what the company is providing. What we're providing is data infrastructure based around that, right? So we see the format as this compatibility layer that is very critically important because when you're talking about sharing the exact same tables between Trino and Spark and Snowflake and other engines, like we all have to agree on what that interchange format is and how those things work together. But that's not what Tabular does. Right. There are a lot of pieces of data infrastructure below that sort of query layer that you need. And that's why I think people have been referring to us as a headless data warehouse. Right. We provide actually a lot of the components of a data warehouse just without that top query layer. So we provide like a catalog service to keep track of what tables are there and broker transactions and do things like that. We provide, notably, I think, security services. So you can actually secure all access to your data lake, which is something that we've only seen, you know, two companies actually do, where they're securing all access to the data lake. We've seen Pinterest pull it off and Netflix pull it off. And we were the ones that did it at Netflix. And then we also provide the background services. So a lot of these newer table formats, it's a matter of deferring work until later, right? So you can do something super quick, but you've stacked up work that you have to do later. And so we do that work, whether it is figuring out how best to lay out your tables and getting them into that form for query performance, or whether it's just mundane things like noting that you have 1,000 old versions of the table and we can probably, you know, bring that down to just few days worth of history and age off all of the files that are no longer needed.
So I'm super curious, who is Tabular specifically servicing? Because the way you describe it almost makes me think that it's making Iceberg more accessible and usable to companies that aren't like the Netflixes or like Apples or Airbnbs of the world. But then I'm sure you also had a bunch of Iceberg users that just kind of wanted more of the, like, to your point, data infrastructure, more of that like work done for them. So who is it really built for? Like, are you trying to expand the number of people using Iceberg? Or are you trying to service the ones currently using it, or kind of both?
Kind of both, which I know isn't a great answer because we should be targeted. I would say our first set of customers is definitely people that are interested in the benefits of Iceberg, but who either don't already run the infrastructure or, you know, don't really know where to start. Like I said, Iceberg, you need to run these maintenance services. And how do you do that? How do you get a good catalog? We just take care of all of that. Then there are other things that everyone wants. So our like optimization service to go recommend table settings and then put your data into that format, you know, both existing Iceberg users and new Iceberg users all want that. So it's a matter of, you know, when it becomes a compelling enough offering for the existing Iceberg users to say, you know what, we're not really ever going to build something that sophisticated.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the fun and challenging part, potentially, right? Starting a company at this stack is you have a lot of deep technical users that knows Iceberg and involved in Iceberg, and then expanding amount of community of folks looking to start leveraging. Because I think there's actually lots we can talk about. I'm very intrigued about this term headless data warehouse, obviously. You know, we haven't seen this term at all before. There's headless BI, there's headless a bunch of other CRMs, headless data warehouse, we've never really seen or hear about it. I guess, what is the sort of the trade-offs when it comes to being headless or not? Like, how does a customer need to think about, oh, I want headless warehouse? Because one thought process could be, well, I'm going to have a lot of warehouses or increasing number of warehouses, right? And so maybe that's one way for me to actually be able to secure as a whole, rather than trying to rely on each data warehouse to trying to do the best job as it could. But I'm sure there's probably other considerations and thinkings around why this is the new trend, right? While all the enterprises just start thinking about and wanting to have headless warehouse. So maybe we can talk about like, what are we seeing from the community and your buyers, and where we see that this will continue? People actually will want more and more the headless warehouse direction.
So what I like about the term headless data warehouse is that I think it sort of describes what people already want. So, you know, you've always had these two, well, not always, in the recent history, you've had two sides of the world. Like, you know, you go with a data warehouse like a Redshift or a Snowflake or a BigQuery, or you've got the data lake side. And the data lake side, you've got, you know, it's sort of a build your own stack where you bring in Trino and Spark and you know, these open source projects. The really great thing about the data lake side is that you share the data with all of the services and you don't have to copy or worry about syncing things or that sort of challenge. On the other hand, the strength of the data warehouse world is you only have the one place and the one engine and everything stays there. But as complexity increases in either case, you end up copying between the two because, oh, you want Spark and that's a data lake thing. And now you want like to sync your Spark outputs over to Snowflake to power a BI tool. And then the rest of the data lake side is also still a mess because you've got, how are we doing permissions enforcement? So maybe you set up Ranger and then you set up Trino to talk to Ranger. And it's like, oh, well, Spark doesn't talk to that. And like, oh, Python doesn't talk to the Hive Metastore. Or like, so that's a mess of like, do these two things talk to one another for every single project in your architecture? And that's a nightmare. I think what people want are portions of both. They want a single source of truth for data that anything can connect to. And they want that with integrated metadata and integrated security. And also, you know, we think integrated maintenance and things like that. So when we were actually talking about raising money and going to investors, what I called it was the bottom half of a database. I think of this in terms of like, everyone wants the bottom half of their database to talk to any number of top halves, query layers. So you've got this storage layer and the query layer, and they've always been really tightly coupled. But we, like I said, by accident, sort of separated the two. by bringing data warehouse semantics and behavior to the data lake world. And now we're really seeing like how far can we take that idea? I think that people really want one single storage engine and all of the query engines should talk to that. But that also means like a dramatic shift in architecture for a number of these players. The most notable one is security, where security has always been enforced at the query layer, but that doesn't work so well because if you're enforcing security at the query layer, you've got to secure every single query engine separately. And so like there's clearly a balance that needs to be struck there, and we're sort of pioneering that.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And also I think just investing in a good kind of way to position your company is super important early on. So I think it's really smart that you are kind of leaning into this headless data warehouse concept. I'm curious because you just went GA, and there's a lot kind of as part of that, like you've got security functionality, data cataloging. Curious how you thought about whether or not to release certain functionality earlier versus not. And like, it's kind of like a big release. And so how did you think about that versus doing kind of like piecemeal a little bit more as far as functionality?
Well, I think there was just a logical progression for every step in our architecture. So we knew that there were certain aspects that we wanted to ship with initially. So number one was painless infrastructure. You know, the people using this don't want to set up 5 different projects. That's the allure of this data warehouse world where you have one thing that can do everything. It might not be great at everything, but you have one central component. And then the broader like modern data stack is stuff that is known to work well and integrate with that. And so, you know, we think of the world that we're pioneering the same way. We want that to be really simple and painless so that you can get up and running really quickly. So that's one aspect. And that pulls in, you know, you need a catalog, you need the maintenance services running in the background. You need a lot of stuff in order to like make it so people don't have to think, oh, how am I expiring old versions of data in my tables? Like that's not something data engineers want to care about. The next logical step was, well, how do people trust a startup in this space? And, you know, we're essentially saying, you know, our long-term value proposition is doing all of this storage engine work for you. It is compacting and optimizing and figuring out for all of the various uses of your data, how should your data be structured and what's going to make it, you know, the smallest, most efficient data set possible? Well, that requires being able to access people's data and being trusted to store their metadata. And that trust required us to launch with access controls and a very tight security story. It also, you know, required us to launch with our SOC 2 report and things like that, because you're just not going to get the trust from organizations that you need without that. And so we saw this as we need to launch as a company that is improving your security story in a data lake rather than a company that could compromise it. And so that's why we provide S3 access logs that can be, you know, cross-indexed with your access logs from Tabular, any access decision that we've made. We have full RBAC access controls at the table level. We have this very tight security story. And we think that that's been paying off because people seem very interested in securing their data lakes, even if we're a small startup.
Yeah. And I think prior to Tabular, the company existing, right, all your users are very technical users that understand what Iceberg does, right? It's table formats, right? Sort of knows what is even isolation or consistency, what they even mean, right? Like you kind of have certain technical knowledge and understanding. And I would probably assume you have enough data in your data lake to even motivate this to happen. To some level, probably. But now with Tabular existing now, I think you are also pushing the adoption of Iceberg in a more broader sense. And we're seeing the community as a whole been talking about more about Iceberg, right? There's Snowflake has been talking about Iceberg quite a lot as well. But I'm very curious, like, because to adopt Iceberg is not a trivial thing at all. Like, I cannot just try. You can take some files and try it. But I'm sure this is, to take on Iceberg is typically like a pretty big decision. How do you see companies typically start adopting this? You know, when you talk to customers that haven't fully used Iceberg yet, Do they start with a particular type of workload? Do they start with a particular type of way? Because you have to do file, basically copy or converting from existing, right? You know, whatever ways you sort it into something else. So just curious, like if you have seen how people have been accelerating adoption Iceberg today.
Well, accelerating adoption of Iceberg is exactly what we're trying to do, right? We know that, yeah, if you're making decisions about, you know, what kind of Metastore do we need? Oh, I'll put off the decision about access controls and, you know, securing this until later because that sounds hard. You know, like then maybe you get a few steps in and you realize you need these maintenance services. Like all of that is what we're trying to make go away as Tabular. And that's why our launch we think was so, you know, helpful, hopefully, to the Iceberg community, because now you can just click through and get started, right? I think it's like two clicks to get a warehouse, a sandbox warehouse and an account in Tabular. So you can try it out and do exactly that. And then, you know, the next step is create a warehouse that's stored in your own bucket. And we set up alongside your existing data infrastructure. So we look like another catalog inside of Spark or Trino or whatever you're using. And so being able to test out really easily was part of the plan. Then being able to migrate is also something that we cared a lot about, right? Setting up and saying like, you can use both your old Hive tables and your new Tabular tables in the same environment and it's really easy. That's where we think it's going to be a lot easier for people to picture that migration story and understand adoption.
So we can't stop the conversation on the launch before we hear how it went and also like how you wanted it to go and what you learned, especially given the fact that like you're a first time founder. I'm sure a lot of this is very new to you. How did the launch go? What did you learn? What was unexpected? I think that'd be really helpful for the community.
I think the biggest thing we learned from the launch was that just because someone has a Google account does not make them a human. I think 10 hours after launch or something, we got a scripted attack where someone was creating Tabular accounts with bogus Gmail accounts. I had to shut it down, add CAPTCHA and things like that. So that was a painful experience. But, you know, overall, I would say it was undoubtedly a success. You know, we had more than 100 signups the first day. We were very happy with the interest from the community and the people giving us positive feedback. It was really amazing. I don't think that there was a negative like person in the bunch, and that was very nice.
Yeah, that's awesome to hear. So I think part of this, you know, when you're looking at this space and you just search Iceberg and just looking at all, like what are other options? You often see a big comparison table between Iceberg, Delta Lake. And I think we've seen probably dozens and dozens of posts, dozens of blog posts and forums and chatter. So I'm sure within this community that kind of has been this discussions. And obviously each project started a little differently, but I think this is kind of the number one discussion that people are trying to figure out. So maybe shine some lights. What is the difference, right? And how do you position Iceberg and Tabular within this? Like, how do you help your customers even to sometimes decide what is right for you? How would you usually go about this?
I think there are two aspects of the Iceberg project and community that are really the differentiators. So, you know, Iceberg has the technical foundation to like take on this workload and really be the unified format that other people choose to invest in. You know, you mentioned earlier the Snowflake. You know, Snowflake is talking about Iceberg all the time. We also have Starburst and Dremio and, you know, other companies in the space promoting Iceberg. And that really comes down to, you know, that there is the technical foundation that allows them to be confident that this is the right format moving forward. Not all of the projects you mentioned have that technical foundation. I would say that, you know, Delta has a pretty solid technical foundation, although I have quibbles with, you know, what's there. They do a good job in general. One that I think is confusing is actually Hoodie, where, you know, it doesn't support concurrent writes, or at least doesn't support isolation or atomicity guarantees in the presence of concurrent writes. It is very tied to the JVM, and so it's not portable. it would be a nightmare, honestly, if you were to try and port it to Python or Rust or something like that. So like, I think Hudi definitely lacks that technical foundation, and the adoption commercially of Iceberg, I think, is an indication that those problems don't exist for Iceberg. The second differentiator between Iceberg and the other projects is the community aspect. So in the Iceberg community, we started it as, you know, not a vendor. We started it as people who just wanted Iceberg to take off and for everyone to be able to use it. We were using, you know, Redshift at the time, and we dreamt of a time when Redshift would natively support Iceberg tables so that we wouldn't have to build Iceberg support into every single thing ourselves. And so we knew that community and being vendor neutral in the community was a very, very important aspect of the project. You know, it means that both Starburst and Dremio can invest dollars in making support for this format really first class and great. And I think that, again, the commercial adoption really shows that that's the case. Not all formats are vendor neutral, right? And so I think that's the biggest issue that people have with Delta in general, is that it's very tightly controlled by Databricks. They've done a great job of open sourcing new features, but they do that periodically when it works for Databricks. And vendors like Starburst aren't really given a whole lot of heads up. Like, hey, we're releasing a new feature that only Databricks supports. You're welcome. I think that that inhibits adoption. And that's not something that we want to do in the Iceberg community.
Yeah. And I also think some of the content that like Dremio and others have come out with on Iceberg, like that's super powerful. And I also wanted to talk about your content strategy in general, because you've clearly invested a lot into documentation, blogs, and just a lot out there about Iceberg, even like cheat sheets. And I guess now like it makes sense why you did that, but how were you thinking about that and the team? Like how much content to produce? Because it's really time consuming and it's important, but like what was the strategy there and what have you learned?
I think that, you know, our strategy with the open source community is like, that's our addressable market. We want everyone to support Iceberg. We want Iceberg to be something that's adopted by engines, and we want this to be the de facto standard. And so, you know, we need to support that. We need to put out that content to help people be successful with it. From our perspective as well, the community is transitioning from a community of data platformers to a community of data engineers and data analysts and really users of this. And we want, in those contexts, I don't actually want anyone to think about Iceberg, right? I want them to think about the problems and what they need to get done. So we're trying to support that transition, right? We're trying to support people that are coming to this and wondering like, okay, say it's Iceberg, like, what can I do? How do I do these things? And so I think that that's where the, you know, basic content, like cheat sheets and tutorials and things are super important. And that's where we want to support the community.
I think some of the content you talk about definitely is like the way you want to interact with the community and things like that. I guess this is a space where you have a lot of ecosystem partners. We talk about Snowflake, talk about Starburst, we talk a lot of data vendors, and you also have other ecosystems that are trying to also expand as well. What has been the most surprising or challenging part of, you know, running Tabular? I kind of alluded to the ecosystem part because I feel like that probably be one of the parts to navigate, right? When you run a company at this layer, is to have to figure out how to work, you know, within this ecosystem, push, you know, have ecosystem partners together while you're building your products. What has been the most, like, number one or two things you had to learn that either surprised you or been the most challenging?
The most challenging by far with ecosystem partners is bootstrapping that relationship, because everyone is very friendly. I don't doubt that we're the same way, but customers and customer asks are what drive priorities. You know, that's going to be the norm across any startup, anything, right? And so it's been hard because, you know, the first couple people, they're like, oh, well, I'd love for this to be supported. And we're like, well, yeah, you need to ask them to do that because they're not going to support Tabular out of the goodness of their hearts. And so like, we've had to find people where, you know, the open source existing support was there. And then when they become curious, they're like, hey, we're interested in a commercial offering of, you know, this thing. at that point we can say, okay, hey, well, since you're Tabular customers, you know, go talk to your account rep and ask them for Tabular support. And it's really those sorts of things that get the ball rolling. So that's been a big challenge. They're critically important, right? We want it to be super easy for you to click through. And like, we have this support with Snowflake. We were able to build it from our side where you can set up table sync into Snowflake. And like, you know, it's very easy for you to then go use Snowflake with your Tabular tables. That's a challenge across the board though, but one that we really think is important to solve. Those integrations make, you know, this modern data stack like ecosystem around our project where, yeah, if you want to just try out Dremio, click over there and, you know, authorize access from Dremio, you should be able to do that. So that's our long-term vision, is getting there. I think I focused more on partners than you intended, but that was definitely a learning experience.
No, I love the partner ecosystem and customer-based approach. It makes a ton of sense. I also wanted to ask how you're thinking about the commercial strategy for Tabular. I know it's still pretty early, but you do have pricing up. How did you think about that? Like, where did you kind of start? What were kind of the constraints you put on? Because I think for any open source company, it's really hard coming up with your commercial strategy because you have this community-based approach that you could like kibosh your own open source success if you suddenly make certain functionality fade that you shouldn't. So how have you thought about that?
So we thought about this a lot before starting the company and actually did our initial round of funding with this baked in because we wanted to make it clear what our stance on Tabular and the open source community was. And then like the second blog post I wrote was Tabular and the open source community. So we thought about this and decided, you know, Iceberg is a format. It's a library and a format. And it's something that, you know, is essentially driven by or built into other things. And so that stance from the start of the open source project really gave us an opportunity to have different spheres. So, you know, we don't, you know, hold anything back from the open source. And we want engines all the way down to data in S3 or Azure to be completely open source in terms of using Iceberg. If they want it, like, of course, engines can build their own Iceberg implementations, et cetera, but we don't control that. What we do is like, we provide runtime services. You know, how do you keep something running 24/7, monitor it, make sure it is providing new features like multi-table transactions and all of those hard things? Well, that I think provides a good opportunity for us, right? That's what the other platform teams at Apple and Netflix and Airbnb, that's what they run. And if you want us to run that for you, that's great. And we really hope to earn your business by doing a great job at that. But that gives us this very clean separation between Iceberg as a format and an open source community and Tabular as a company. So we act essentially like any platform team would in the open source community. The other thing I do want to mention is like the tendency of companies, and I was acutely aware of this because I've felt this pain in the past, of like interacting where a company sees itself as an owner of an open source community. And not that there's anything wrong, because there are sometimes where companies do own an open source community and do completely control a project. And that's just their model. But that's not the model of Iceberg. Iceberg is, again, this model where anyone can come and participate, and even vendors that compete with one another are on equal footing. So we wanted to really set the tone of our interactions with the community as participants and not owners, and also remind ourselves all the time that we should be open and honest with the community about what we need and not like just try to shove things through because we have committers.
Yeah, but actually that's a really interesting point around the community, because if you think of how database being built or warehouses or any data system, you typically design the whole system together, the engine with the storage, with the files. You sort of just like in totality, you think of how they work completely. Imagine now working with Iceberg as part of your stack, you mm-hmm. sort of have to now understand how not just Iceberg works, and also how to design my system with Iceberg in mind, right? So I'm sure different style and different ways of execution will impact. I wonder, like, how do you work with the open source ecosystem? Not just how they can just adopt you, but also like actually incrementally like design the specs together, right? Come up with ways so it can fit each other's needs. So they actually feel like there's mutual support. You're helping them and they're helping you. Because I think that now you're such a critical part of the stack. Wonder if there's any lessons or things you learned to be able to do that effectively.
So this is where I think open source really helps. And like, if you consider the value of diversity on a team, right? Different perspectives, different ways of thinking about or solving problems is a huge, huge value. And that's where Iceberg is able to take advantage of a lot of those different communities. So our V2 spec that brought in row level deletes was a great example of like, if we were going from the batch engine perspective, we would have done things a certain way. But we were working with the Flink team at the time. You know, we're working with some of the Alibaba guys, and they brought up really great points about what we should change and how we should extend the spec to work for streaming scenarios. It pushed us a lot harder and, you know, really changed what we built and what we designed to be a lot better. It pushed us to incorporate the sequence numbers and, you know, other very low level aspects of how Iceberg works and tracks, you know, row level deletes. And so I think that we are a much stronger community by welcoming anyone who wants to participate in those designs.
Awesome. So the thing that we love ending these podcast episodes on are pieces of advice. I know we've had a lot of these woven throughout the episode, but any kind of big pieces of advice, especially as a first-time founder, that you kind of wish someone had told you before, or just like major learnings along the way that we haven't touched on?
So my daughter's birthday was yesterday. So my parents were over and I was talking to my dad about this. And I think starting a business and being a founder is a lot like having a child. You have no idea what you're doing at first, and that's okay. You're a smart person. People have done this before, and everyone goes through that learning experience. So just take it one step at a time, and you've got this. You'll figure it out. I remember in the first month, it was like, okay, we just secured funding. I've got to have payroll and benefits and HR and like all this stuff by July 1st. How do I do that? You know, I didn't even know how to get a corporate bank account or what the difference between corporate and I, given what happened, probably should have looked into it a bit more. It's been a roller coaster this week, but you know, like I knew none of that and I figured it out. You know, my co-founders did. It wasn't just me. But yeah, you've got it. It's something that you take one step at a time and you learn as you go, and you'll always make mistakes, but it'll be all right.
I think that's good advice to end on, because I do think, especially if you haven't done it before, it's super overwhelming. You're like, okay, now I'm responsible for people's livelihood and I don't have a bigger company that's instructing me on what to do. But this is fantastic. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Ryan. There's so many awesome nuggets in here.
Thank you for having me on. This was a lot of fun.